Welcome to the RL Life Podcast, where we speak to top business and thought leaders from around the world. This episode is a replay of one of our live business insight sessions tackling the hottest and most pressing trends with leading industry experts. Be part of this conversation as it happens with RL Life. Visit rllife.com to learn more. Gain early access to various insight sessions and join over 8,000 leading business executives from top 500 companies in Europe to build meaningful professional relationships and hear from renowned experts all year long. Visit rllife.com to apply for membership today.
Talking about an in-depth conversation we're about to have, well, we have one for today because we're going to talk about the AI and enterprise architecture. The power of AI and enterprise architecture, because AI is a given. AI machine learning tools, for example, they help to streamline projects, to analyze data, to push business outcomes more or less. And then the question is, of course, how can architects benefit from AI? How can they make use of the value that AI can offer them? In other words, what's the real power of AI when it comes to enterprise architecture? That's what we're going to talk about today. What is the role of AI in enterprise architecture? How does AI help to, well, let's say, solve or think about key architectural thoughts and challenges and tasks? And how does AI actually create more agility? Those topics we are going to, well, at least try to discuss today. What are the trends? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? What are key practical examples? And what are, for example, the things to watch in the near future? Fortunately, I have two absolute experts on board for you today to have this conversation with. Let me briefly introduce them. The first one is Mr. Hisham Arafat. He is the Chief Architect and Mentor, AI advisor and professor of practice at Nile University. He has more than 26 years of engineering background, and for the last, let's say, 12 years, he has a focus on digital transformation. He worked for all kinds of different organizations throughout the world in all kinds of different sectors, from oil and gas, healthcare, finance, and so on. Our next guest is Mr. Daniel Kafer. He is an international tech leader. He is an author. He is the former Danish country head of Meta, formerly known as Facebook, and the global digital marketing director at Ooredoo. He currently focuses on his platform supertrends.com, and that boldly navigates the realm of innovation, including the captivating evolution of AI. So another expert who is really into the practical examples and really talks a lot to organizations and people in the field of AI and enterprise architecture. Hi, Hisham. Hi, Daniel. Hisham, how are you?
Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for inviting me to this great event.
Absolutely. Thanks for making time for us. I expect that it's not that snowy where you are in Cairo as it is here in Stockholm, right?
Yeah, it's just like 15 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, it's, it's a bit of a difference. Daniel, welcome to our show. Happy to have you here. You're based in Cyprus right now. No snow, I guess.
Right. Yeah, so here it's about, I think, 17, 18 degrees. So I guess kind of similar to Cairo.
We are very jealous. Let's therefore move on to what we're going to talk about today, the power of AI in enterprise architecture. To kick off with the kickoff question, to give, first of all, a overview of where we are right now. When we talk about AI and enterprise architecture, what's the current landscape in your opinion? Daniel, to start off with you.
Yeah, so I think we are still very, very early in the development. I think companies are still trying to find out where the responsibility of AI lies. Is it within the C-suite? Is it within digital transformation? And then the next bit is obviously where does it make sense to focus the efforts on AI? And I think the answer to that depends on the company, right? If for example, the company is sales and marketing driven, it would make a lot of sense to focus there on those processes. If on the other hand, you have some very heavy processes internally that are very time consuming, that can be fixed with AI, obviously that would be the area. And I think finally, the industries where data is really important in terms of analysis, then AI can actually produce its own synthetic data, as well as kind of stitching the current data structure together to add a lot of value. But I think it really depends on the type of company where it makes sense to start. And in terms of where to place the responsibility, I think it's very important to place it at the top, because AI is all about strategy. If you don't understand the strategy and the goals of the company, how can you find out where to apply AI?
Yeah.
It's virtually impossible. But I think that is also a work in process, because I think a lot of senior leaders, I wouldn't say they're concerned about AI, maybe some are, but they're not really sure where to start, really.
Yeah.
So it's all still in a flux, as I see it.
Hisham, I saw you nodding. You have a huge background in engineering, focusing on digital transformation. You talk a lot with different organizations. What do you see where we are right now when it comes to AI and enterprise architecture? What's the current landscape?
I would say that we are in a risky situation as we speak, because the amount of uncertainty associated with any decision to be taken. So typically, and this is what enterprise architecture has been used for, to bridge the gap between technology and business. But now we are talking about another new component, relatively new component, which is artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence itself is coming with many different meanings and levels, from being a science and up to being an application. In between, we have the models, the algorithms. It's a kind of mutating situation, I would say. Over the last year, we have also the very disrupting technology of large language models and generative AI. And now enterprises are trying to leverage, I'm talking about business enterprises, are trying to leverage and take advantage of these new emerging technologies. And this puts a lot of burden at top of the enterprise architect, how to put these new technologies into the overall landscape of enterprise architecture. The new thing here is that these are more of data-driven artificial intelligence. Data was there, always there inside the enterprise architecture as one of the major layers. But now we are talking about models and artificial intelligence models using machine learning, deep learning, and other kind of stuff. Deploy the top of this to serve a specific purpose. So I fully agree with the point that if you don't know where you are heading to, it's going to be very to place a proper component of AI, especially with the risk of mutation and uncertainty around it.
So you are rather on a, let's say, worried, well, I would not say pessimistic, but a bit worried perspective when it comes to AI and enterprise architecture. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes. Because obviously there is two sides of AI. There is AI that is oriented to end consumers and end customers. The one you see now, everyone is using ChatGPT and other stuff. And there is another one which is oriented to a consumer or a customer of an organization. So if you are an organization and you are trying to build something with AI and you are offering some kind of service or product based on AI, so there is it's not all about enterprise architecture and technicality only, but we have legal aspects, we have commitment, we have manageability and sustainability. You want to have this investment, preserved and sustained. You don't want to start today to offer some service to your end user and find out that you are violating one of these acts that keep coming in different countries.
Yeah.
Or out of sudden, the service itself that you are based on, your own service, vanished for any reason, stopped working. They are, start to apply excessive fees. They are violating some of data privacy, for example.
Yeah.
These all risks that you need to, I'm not saying you should stop, but you need to take into very carefully into consideration. Because yeah. it's at the end, liability and commitment you need yeah. to be careful about, in addition to investing.
Daniel, what's your take on this? Are you also on the, let's say, the risky side of the current developments, or do you see more opportunities than rather challenges? What's your take?
Generally, I'm optimistic because I think. AI
I think. By the way, Hisham is as well, right?
But, yeah.
Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead.
Yeah. So generally, I'm optimistic in terms of what AI can do for society. I think it can bring a lot of growth and a lot of prosperity in general. My main worry is actually because I see it in Europe. As do you in Stockholm. My main worry is whether Europe are missing the train, so to speak, a little bit, because Europe are typically very concerned with new developments like this, and we typically dive into regulation, whereas China specifically like progress very quickly. I also actually find in the Middle East that, you know, the fear of AI is not too profound, at least where I've been in Dubai and Riyadh and so on. Mm. And in the US, obviously, the development is very rapid as well. So, I mean, one of my concerns right now is actually that Europe might be left further behind. We are already behind, and I don't want to see Europe fall further behind in AI development. So, I mean, that is more my concern right now.
And what will be the consequence of that, Daniel? The fact that, according to you, Europe is more or less behind in compared to other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the investment levels from private companies in the US, I don't know if it's 5 or 10x of Europe, but I think it's. I mean, nobody knows. I've tried to get the numbers. they're not that transparent. And then you have the China 2030 plan, which where the ambition is to take them to being number one within AI, whatever that may mean, in 2030. And in Europe, I mean, we of course are interested in AI, but we spend a lot of time discussing. When you look at polls, there's a lot of fear. So I think we will stand and wait to some extent, at least compared to the US and China. And I don't think that will give us a lot of control, actually. Okay. I think it will give us the opposite.
And then the question, both of you, but you both identify already some big risks. Hisham, more concrete on more on the field of uncertainty, and are you doing the right investments? Daniel, you're saying, well, we need to make sure, at least from a European perspective, that we not are getting too much behind the rest of the world. A question from, let me say, Kent, thank you very much, Kent, for your question. Is those specific challenges and risks that are associated with integrating AI into enterprise architecture, how can they be mitigated, you would say? Right? Because, well, of course, we can identify risks, but then we also would like to hear, of course, how can we deal with them? Hisham, to start off with you.
Yeah. So I would say that the most important thing to be like a step forward of just being using the current AI technologies, you need to have. I'm talking here from the perspective of typical organizations. I'm not talking about giant digital platforms. They do have the luxury to spend money and invest and lose and replace. I'm talking about reasonable organizations. to evaluate whatever you are going to use and see how it should be used within 2 to 3 years. So if you are
we have a bit of a bumpy connection, so Hisham, with you. Sure. I think that there are some hiccups now and then, but please go on. Please go on.
Okay. So if you make this kind of medium term planning of what you are going to use, what are the kind of services you are going to offer, what are the replacements, if for any reason the components or the technologies in AI you are using having some problems regarding legality and pricing and stuff like this, so you need to be always ready with different scenarios. This is the first part of mitigation. Second part is your team. You need to invest in your internal team, people who are or should be taking care of implementing these or adopting these AI technologies. This is quite important to have knowledgeable people who can decide what to use in terms of external services. If we are talking about even building your own AI model, which is a kind of even more challenging to build your own internal components, this needs deeper expert level. So I would say here, technicality make difference. Taking care about the technical essence of AI, because AI is a very large and wide term for many different things. So you need really a knowledgeable team. This is, I would say, the key thing, who are able to understand the different patterns, the different architectures, the different components, the scope of these components, and how they relate to what you are trying to do. Also, they should be having some kind of innovative mindset, not just reusing what is there, but trying to find out what are the kind of opportunities for your own organization based on your strategy and based on your business, where to plug and use existing AI components into your overall services and products landscape.
Yeah. Daniel, Christian acknowledges your point that investments, especially in Europe, is still a very big topic. I would also, Christian also mentioned a question about predictive modeling, talking about opportunities. We talked about risk and challenges. Let's also discuss the opportunity. Predictive modeling would be an opportunity, according to Christian. There is actually no tool currently available in this area, Christian states. And he asks, and that also touches a little bit upon the point Hisham already makes, the kind of organization in which this could be suitable. Are we talking about, let's say, startup companies, or is this more suitable for established companies that have more, let's say, time, money to invest and to implement this? What's your take on that?
So I think AI is quite universal. I mean, it's from the one-man company up to the huge companies. I would say the approach is different, right? So let me try to give some concrete examples.
Please.
So if you are, let's say, a small or medium business, and AI can give you some clear advantages. For example, if we look at the marketing bit, for example, so doing really good digital marketing, for example, is normally done with the help of like an ad agency, a media agency, a professional marketing department, right? Which is impossible to have for a smaller or medium business. So I think today, if you really learn tools like ChatGPT, Midjourney, I think it's called Video AI that can actually make video from the Midjourney images. If you learn that really, really well, you can do a lot of the whole advertising process by yourself. I'm not saying that the final product needs to be AI, but instead of having a discussions between three different agencies costing you hundreds of thousands of dollars before you have a campaign, you can do a lot of the homework yourself and say, this is my expectation. It should look something like this, only better. And you can have the same discussion on best practices and in terms of the planning and the buying. So you can take a lot of your strategy to, let's say, a graphic agency or a digital buying agency and say, please execute this. So I'm not saying this is equally good to having world-class agencies, but it's a lot better than the position you were in before. And I think, I mean, it's pretty much like any process you do. If you're a small company, you can kind of pivot, do it more effectively, get closer to the bigger companies. Bigger companies, obviously, they have some larger processes that they need to go through. Like for example, their digital experiences, customer service, moving that to AI is obviously risky, but super rewarding once it works. I mean, what that could look like is AI responding to clients via chats, maybe 10 GPTs talking to clients and one person overseeing all the chats, kind of just optimizing and seeing if a chat goes wrong, right? So where the advantages are the largest is actually hard to say. I think both small and large businesses can optimize a lot using AI.
Yeah.
But the way it will happen will be different.
Before we hear more insights from our esteemed guests, I'd like to remind you that this podcast is brought to you by the AuroLife Business Network, the exclusive community for Europe's leading CXOs. Exchange ideas with your peers, gain insights from top industry experts, and connect with executives who truly understand your unique challenges. AuroLife is where CXOs like you make valuable connections. Visit AuroLife.com to learn more.
Jonas asked on to talk us about the let's say advancements that can be made when it comes to enterprise architecture, and that's exactly the following topic I would like to touch upon. So thanks, Jonas, for this encouraging question, because let's focus on some particular aspects of enterprise architecture and the role and the power of AI. So, and I would like just to, as examples, when it comes to, for example, focus on optimizing project outcomes, project failure rates, digital transformations, streamline decision making processes. Hisham, can you please focus a bit on, let's say, the concrete opportunities, let's say advancements we could make with AI when it comes to enterprise architecture?
Okay, this is a good point. And what can we do? And I think it's a kind of mutual relation between enterprise architecture and artificial intelligence. So when you put together your enterprise architecture, which is a journey and a process, you need to be able to include artificial intelligence in a proper way for your organization. Sorry, excuse me. And at the same time, many of the enterprise architecture tools might be able to use AI to enhance the different models and the selection of projects that is being done. I would mention here a very old example, just to showcase that we have been for a while using AI behind the scene without knowing or giving it the name of AI, which is for larger project portfolios. There is, again, the risk, but this time the risk from a project management point of view. So you need to register your risks, you need to manage them. And one of the very, I would say, old tool to do so is simulation, using simulation, which is a kind of artificial intelligence models. Simulation models is actually one of the amazing opportunities for all businesses to make use of. And this has been equipped into project management tools so that you can simulate your project. So you can act accordingly, you can plan the risks for your projects, and this definitely is a mainstream tool on minimizing the risks and the failure rate of your project. This is just one example. We can think of many other examples on how to use predictive models when running your projects, and which is also will be positively affecting your enterprise architecture decisions and what you do as a roadmap for which project to be used first. So you can even do this kind of simulation and prediction over a portfolio of projects. For example, if you are a construction company, and recently I have been working for unique case, which is the development of in Saudi Arabia for the Red Sea district, which is called NEOM. It's part of NEOM project, and they have got for one program, I would say something around 50 different projects to run. And under these projects, there is different sub projects as well. So it's a huge number of investment, and you know, so and simulating risks in this.
We're losing you a bit, Hisham. I'm sorry.
Simulation over the portfolio. Sorry.
Yeah. Please go on. Go on. No, I think we're losing you. Daniel, you're still there, right?
Yes.
But while I think Hisham is trying to get his connection ready again, for you, when the topics are mentioned and when it comes to improving on project outcomes, a decrease of failure rates, streamlining decision making, all kind of different pillars that are, well, of course, part of the enterprise architecture. How would you consider the role and the advancements of AI in this particular field?
Yeah, so first of all, I believe when it comes to using AI more effectively, it's very important that that the whole organization starts to understand what AI can actually do in order to get the value from it. And I think once the leadership at least understand this fully, I think, you know, that then it's about adding all relevant data, right? So one of the big challenges, like for all companies, even the largest ones, is that you have a lot of pockets of data lying around. And people always say, it's so important, let's gather data. And I always say, well, data is overrated if you don't use it to get some actionable insights. So I think this is one of the areas, right? If you start having AI kind of chew on all this data, and at the same time, you feed, I mean, every time you have a management meeting or you have a report, for example, if you have a consultancy report, you know, put it into a model. It could be your own ChatGPT model. It's not that hard to make, right? And suddenly you can discuss with the GPT model about all your data, all your historic management meetings, all the proposals that have been at the management meetings, and then let AI help you evaluate the best outcomes and the best decisions. Today, in most companies, it's not very scientific, right? How you actually arrive at decisions.
No, but that's a good point, I think, because, for example, Dina makes also a point on that, and also Vikram, about this data and about, for example, Dina states, well, many large companies have huge amounts of unorganized, unstructured data. Do you still need to fix that before applying AI on it in order to take next steps when it comes to enterprise architecture? And Vikram says, what's actually, when it comes to a lack of system documentation, when it comes to organizations, what are your experiences in using AI to reverse engineer documentation from code? So you're talking about the data. Do you have any specific use cases you would like to point out that can be that can explain this, how to deal with this?
Yes. So let me give you an example of, for example, in the HR department of a large company, right? So they might have a lot of data on everybody who's employed in the company. Let's say it's 20,000 people, right? But it's scattered between divisions, right? So they could take that data, have AI stitch it together with data, let's say from LinkedIn, and then even generate synthetic data. So I cannot describe exactly what that happens, how that happens, but it's kind of AI filling out the blank points of data, which what should likely be there in its place, right? So The answer is actually yes. You don't have to clean up your data. You can have AI clean up your data and to some extent make educated guesses where you don't have data. And it actually, the result of these educated guesses are often very, very, very strong. So how can you use this? Well, for example, if you have an open job and you say, well, do I have somebody internally within my 20,000 people working for us that would fit that job? Or would there be somebody on LinkedIn who would be better to recruit? AI could actually say, well, you know, you have 5 people internally. We have identified 10 or 20 people on LinkedIn who would fit this profile perfectly as well. You can try and see who of them could be available. And then you could kind of go into an assessment on who would actually fit that job and that profile. And I think very often you would probably, you would not use AI defining who you need for a job. Then you would not use AI to define who could do the job. And I think this is an example where AI will very effectively lead us to better decisions. Yeah. I mean, this is just one example of how to use the data.
Yeah. Hisham, there was a question for you if AI can fix a bad network connection, but I would not ask that question to you. But another question I would like to ask to you is somebody says, well, AI is much more than Gen AI, of course. You were talking about a use case. Can you give another practical example for our audience that explains, let's say, the value of AI in the field of enterprise architecture, but also that has a big impact on companies?
Yeah. I guess so much about the point related to using the data in a proper way. Even with generative AI, there are models now and services made for enterprises that can be also plugged into your enterprise architecture. However, without data, it's nothing. It's not going to work. It will not give you what is intended to be. One of these, for example, you can now replace a lot of what you do with a very old and still struggling field of business intelligence. So it's very surprising for most audiences that organizations are still struggling with the traditional business intelligence, how to use the data, how to answer even very simple questions about sales, about marketing, about progress, about distribution and logistic jobs, which is quite huge and massive in like in courier services, for example. So the point here and the key challenge is how to make your enterprise architecture first work in a proper way to bring the data into consolidated, integrated stuff using even essential stuff like master data management, for example. And then once you do this, you are ready to bring in AI as part of your enterprise architecture. If we talk away from generative AI, we have many other examples. I would say all business analytics is still there. There is a still very huge opportunity for companies to leverage business analytics like optimization, like search, like prospective models, and also integrating these into applications, the mainstream and operational applications. So this is quite a very potential opportunity to enhance what should have been enhanced a long time ago, like 20 years back, in terms of business intelligence and business analytics, to make it realized now with either generative AI or other kind of AI of AI models.
Yeah.
So the main point here to emphasize is that we are talking about AI for enterprise architecture and for organizations, but at the same time we should not forget that there are essential stuff need to be in place first, and there are a lot of issues need to be solved with data, business intelligence reporting, and this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And AI can offer this.
And Daniel mentioned. Can you, or maybe Daniel, both of you, can give a very practical example on a, let's say, an AI of an, or no, a enterprise architecture challenge. For example, Jonas mentions one, technical debt reduction, simplified design patterns. Just a very concrete area challenges when it comes to enterprise architecture. And do you have an example in which, well, let's say before it was, well, let's say a mess, and when AI comes in or when a practical tool comes in, afterwards it has been improved? I'll give you a few seconds to think about it, but maybe do you have a very concrete practical example on what the role of AI in that particular field was then?
Yeah, so I can go a little bit more into detail with my last example of the data in HR, for example, where today on LinkedIn, right, you can see how well people fit a certain role, but it's actually not really accurate. But if you use all the data that the company has on the role, and then you use AI to gather like a 360 picture of the possible candidates. It could also be candidates who send in their CV. You can get scores that are like 10 to 20 times more accurate versus the job. And they've actually done some tests where HR experts have, you know, been sitting in detail and reviewing these applications versus what AI has done. And it's very, very, very close. So that is just, I think, one concrete example that I've seen.
Yeah, thank you very much. Also, lots of questions coming in on, and if I summarized correctly, for example, a question from Willem, but also Hugo, who, let me rephrase it. First, we can talk about, let's say, for another couple of hours on enterprise architecture and AI. But for example, Willem asks, would AI be able, in the end, to design and operate the ideal enterprise architecture? In other words, we could have a session of 1 minute and just ask AI, what's the best solution?
I guess that's the definition of AGI, right? I mean, the second you have some form of AGI, and you can make a perfect digital twin.
Yeah,
you can pretty much replace, you know, yourself with that twin, right? Because you could give them information about the questions, and then, you know, the feedback you got from the interview could even have your digital twin then also the questions to make them more relevant. And I think that the same with ourselves, like if there was an advanced digital twin, I even think today, if we put everything we've ever said and written into a GPT model and let that answer for us, I'm not even sure people could tell.
No.
Even today.
Hisham, I saw you nodding. Could I just ask AI to solve all my enterprise architecture challenges for me?
I don't think it will work right now because AGI and even digital twins is still very premature. AGI is still not on the table, just an idea. But what we can benefit is to ask for recommendation, just like what we do with other areas, asking for a specific question. So I would say this is a kind of which I believe this is the right implementation right now is human assisted AI or AI assisted human. You can put it the other way around, that you ask specific questions and you get out of the global knowledge that these AI models, generative AI models, has been trained for on to get some recommendations that enlight your way. But at the end, you need to take the decision. As a design authority or enterprise architecture team, you need to take the decision. But at this time, you have leveraged the knowledge available for a specific case.
Yeah.
So this is a practical as we speak.
Yeah.
But in the future, what might happen?
and then a follow-up question on this human assistance part you're mentioning. Hugo, who is an enterprise architect, says, I find that most of my work is actually about the interactions between people and departments working right. Often, I shape my deliverables according to the specific context I'm in. Is there anything AI can help Hugo with that? Or will it be a purely human interaction thing without any AI tools coming in?
I think
Daniel,
I actually thought it's about humans getting used to asking more and more strategic questions to AI.
Yeah.
I noticed my own way that I wrote like articles and books and so on in the beginning with AI was writing it myself, then giving it to AI for editing and improving, right? Like if you go way to the top of the pyramid strategically, you could ask AI, my audience is this, what should I write about that would make it, you know, interesting for them to read? It's a very different way of doing it. So just below that, maybe today, I'll say, okay, I want to write about this. I have these points I want to make, and then I ask AI to write me the article, and then I see what comes up. I would have a complex prompt of maybe 120 words, right? Hmm. But getting to the point where you let go a little bit and say, this is what I want, please make it for me. It's hard to do. I mean, that took me a while.
Yeah.
And I think it will take me another while to kind of just define my target audience, what I want to achieve. And then say, tell me what to write. I think that will probably put some brakes on the development that humans are not quite ready to work that way.
Hisham, how would you say AI can, well, let's say, help Hugo in this human interaction part of his work, which he said is basically one of the biggest parts of his work, actually, being an enterprise architect?
Yeah. I would say that the things that we are talking about generative AI only, okay, but I will add some additional point related to other types of AI. So if we are talking about leveraging the knowledge of other enterprise architecture in the same domain, the good thing here, as Daniel mentioned, is it's all about writing the right prompts to the generative AI to obtain this kind of support. And again, the point here is that how you split down your what you are trying to find out. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to what we do with normal search on Google, for example. It's all about how you write the keywords, how you organize them, how you put them together. But now we have a more sensitive mate to search for you, which is an LLM model. And the good thing is that most of the applications now, as applications on generative AI, like ChatGPT, are using another. So most people know about LLM, large language model, but there's also something called reinforcement learning with human feedback, which is a quite very essential AI model for making the chat application or the personal assistant application get a context of you, what you are looking for within a context. And also it keeps a memory during the session or even across sessions, what you are looking for, what you have been looking for previously, and it tries to enhance the answers for you. So this kind of context is quite similar to, or this is what gives you the feeling you are interacting with something like humans.
Yeah.
I think this might help him to find out, first framing the questions in the right way, and then start to find answers for each piece, assemble them, get another way, another run or another interaction to find out deeper insight about what he's looking for.
Yeah.
But at the end, it's back to the enterprise architect decision to take these inputs from generative AI or any other kind of AI and put them in the proper way within the context of what...
To close the loop again when it comes to the right decision.
It's a kind of iteration, into iteration until enhancing.
Yeah.
There is one important point to mention about AI. It's actually, again, it's a kind of challenge, which is the question. Is it giving me the optimal or the ideal answer for what I'm looking for? And this actually cross generative AI and any other of AI. Okay, this is why, for example, you will notice that when you do route optimization on maps, for example, it gives you alternatives with more sometimes one hour slower path. Okay, so you have 3-4 options. And you find that one of them is like 50 minutes or 1 hour, 1 hour and 10 minutes, slower than others. Why it gives you this very slow route. Because simply you need to contrast. You need to figure out that you are taking option number one or two, but there is option number three that will take 1 hour longer. So if you are not using the application, you might have went into this path.
So
the answer of is it idle or idle, is it giving you idle cushion? This is quite important, the baseline to compare with.
Yeah, that's a very good thing to keep in mind, I would say, for whatever you're going to do on AI in the field of enterprise architecture. Daniel, just in one line, please, very briefly, what would be the key question to you everybody should ask when taking the next step in AI and enterprise architecture?
Well, I would say the key question would be how do we achieve better business outcomes with AI?
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. I mean, it this is what it is all about. It's not a competition about doing the most AI. It's about getting more growth and more profit.
Yeah.
And this is what we need to achieve with AI.
I see Hisham nodding, so the two of you agree on this. Thank you very much for now, Daniel and Hisham, for your insights and for your examples and for your thoughts. And I think the last two questions you are mentioning are great food for thought in the next steps we're taking on AI and enterprise architecture. Thank you, Daniel Kever and Hisham Arafat.